call this meeting to order. I'm chairing temporarily today because the chair has the bill, the first bill up before us. We have four bills today on our agenda. We have limited time because we have to be out of the committee room at by 10:10. So let's get started. Chair Hornstein, you want to make a motion on your bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 3613 to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I have a DE.
Motion's been made to refer the bill to 3613. And you want to move your amendment then?
Yeah. So we have a DE1 amendment. And I can explain what this is about. You may recall those who were here in 2021. We had a floor amendment on the omnibus transportation bill from Representative Kosnick, actually, to make sure that Metro Mobility was part of the forecasted funds, a forecasted program in the budget. And so there was some discussion this past fall around the effective date of this, this bill corrects that. The bill modifies session law, so instead of a July 1st, 2023 effective date, it requires Metro Mobility obligations to first be forecasted beginning with the November 2023 forecast, which matches what's been occurred in practice. And so I have, there are some folks in my council here that can explain this a little bit better, and it's a, more of a technical issue. Mr. Shetman.
I see they're moving down.
Charles Carlson.
I see they're moving down to the dais. And welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Charles Carlson. I serve as Executive Director for Metropolitan Transportation Services at the Metropolitan Council. This bill would clarify the start of when the forecast program would be included in the state economic forecast, and would also clarify the reporting that is associated with that from both MMB and from the Metropolitan Council.
This is really an initiative that the MMB flagged.
Members, any questions of the amendment? If not, all in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Chair Hornstein, if you want to explain the bill. Then.
And we are trying to match the forecast with the established protocols for that MMB uses, and so there was a disconnect between what was in the original language and what MMB is requiring of us.
Members, any questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this clarification is needed, and it's important because we've been challenged with trying to find the funding for Metro Mobility, and being able to forecast it certainly puts it in more of an opportunity in which it can stay up with what its expenses are needed over the time. And I do want to acknowledge that using the February forecast for this first time is a little bit pressing maybe for Met Council. But I have every confidence in them that they will be able to succeed at that and move forward, because I think it's helpful for us at this go around to see what's going to happen using the current forecast as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Lee Petersburg. Any other discussion, questions? Is there anybody in the audience that needs to speak on this bill? If not, the motion is. You want to renew your motion, Chair?
Renew my motion that House File 613 be referred to Ways and Means.
The motion is to be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? As amended. Opposed? Bill's re-referred. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, while you're making it back to the podium, just keep us on task. I will approve the minutes of February 22nd.
Okay. Thank you for that. Is there discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. All right. So our next bill on the agenda is... House File 120, Representative Edelson. And I understand you have, first of all, I'm going to move that House File 120 be laid over for a possible inclusion in a transportation bill. And I understand you have an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do. It's in the A3. And the A3 makes technical changes. There was an old statute that we worked with House staff on just to clarify. And so a technical amendment, I ask for member support.
Is there a discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. So we have now House File 120 as amended before us. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. This is a very early committee for me. You guys, maybe not for you, obviously. It's probably the most exciting bill you're going to have on the bill today, right, on the hearing today, is the rotary license plate bill. This bill has been around as long as I've been at the legislature, so 6 years, but add another two because Dario Anselmo carried it before me, so 8 years. I'm hoping it will be my parting gift here. This is my last session. So the rotary license plate it's representative of we have 64 different clubs in the state of Minnesota. There's about 75,000 rotary members. And so we estimate that this rotary license plate should sell anywhere from 500 to maybe 1,500 license plates. I don't know if we have any Rotarians here. I think a few of you might be. But I am, and so is my testifier here today. So Mr. Chair would love to connect with him. I just would say, though, just a note on this, the fiscal agent for the rotary license plate will be the 5950 Club, which is the Edina Club, and it will act as the fiscal agent for the state of Minnesota in making sure that these funds go to other parts of the state. We will, Mr. Chair, would like to have a clarifying thing for your omnibus to say that the funds will stay in the state of Minnesota. As I read it a few days ago, we kind of missed the deadline, but I think that's important to note, and that they will go for service projects throughout the state of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, if I could go to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Tom Gump. I'm a resident of Edina, Minnesota in Heather's district. I'd like to thank Heather for carrying this bill forward and all the co-authors. Rotary International is an international organization. It has 1.4 million people around the world, and basically they try to do good in the world. They have seven areas of focus, everything from maternal and child health, disease prevention. We do a lot of water, sanitation, hygiene projects around the world. Here in Minnesota, we do a lot of local projects where we give to food banks. We have a Rotary Community Corps that helps Afghan refugees, things like that. The number one external priority right now of Rotary International is trying to cure polio. It is only the second disease that will ever be eradicated. We raise about $50 million a year for that. And then we also, it's matched by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for $150 million. And we think that will be done sometime in the next couple of years. I'm here to answer any questions that you have. But one thing that I want you to know is that we were recently awarded, after 10 years of trying, the international convention here in 2029. So we'll have 20,000 people from around the world come here, and there's an estimated economic impact to our state of $30.4 million, not including post-travel before the convention and after events. So thank you very much for hearing us today.
Thank you. Are there questions of the testifier? Okay. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question as far as what will the dollars that are generated from the actual plans be used? Or is it designated, or does this go kind of to your general fund? Where does it end up?
It goes to the Rotary Foundation, which is a 501c3, and it'll be used for local projects here in Minnesota that qualify to make sure that they are a nonprofit. So food shelves and things like that.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question. And this is modeled after some legislation that Representative Cagle brought to us last year. So. any final thoughts you want? Oh, one more testifier. Sorry about that.
Oh, there we go, yes.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the...
Yeah, my name is Dr. Glenn Bowers. I'm a resident of Vadnais Heights and a member of the Rotary Club of Arden Hills Shoreview. And first, thanks to Representative Edelson for being the chief author and any other committee members who are also co-authors. Just want to talk a little bit more about Rotary and how it's going to work. You know, Rotary is organized into districts, for those who don't know it. And Minnesota has three districts. Like it was mentioned, 5950 will be the fiscal agent. And that's Minneapolis and southwest Minnesota. And I'm in 5960, which is St. Paul in southeast. And then we have a third district, which is the rest of Minnesota. So we have over 160 clubs that are integral to the communities that they serve, with many community service projects. Like as mentioned, there's focus on food insecurity, contributions to food banks, food pantries, packing of meals for kids that can't eat over the weekend because of their level of economic situation, helping with parks. There's been installed in the state parks that are good for all ability parks, I should say, park benches, pollinator gardens that are also educational. Education, scholarships, but also mentoring, many programs that the kids that are in high school that are struggling, help them become successful, graduate from high school, and then become, taxpayers and contributors to society. The way was already mentioned is District 5950 will be the fiscal agent, but then we will distribute the funds to the other two districts, which then they will share with the Rotary clubs in their areas. So again, focus on community service type projects, and Rotary already has great impact in the communities that we serve, but then this will increase the impact that we can make locally. So thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions of the testifier? Okay, any final thoughts, Representative Edelson?
Just thanks, members, for your time. Rotary's mission is service above self, which I think we as elected officials really can relate to. So thank you so much for your support.
Thank you. And with that, members, this bill is laid over. Our third bill on the agenda is House File 4168, and this bill will be laid over. Representative Ream, welcome back to the committee. A lot of people think you're on the Transportation Committee because you've made appearances here. I think you're co-presenting with our member.
I'm just here for moral support.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. I feel like I should start out with by saying, dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to talk about the speed limit.
Yeah.
Because the last time I was here, we were talking
the
about
Prince Highway, yes.
But yes, I'm here to present House File 4168. bill that is referring to adopting a manual that is is with, I'm sorry, it updates the traffic speed limits that were updated at the federal level in December of last year. And I could move forward on explaining it to you if you'd like.
Yes, please. Proceed.
So, thank you, Chair. Since 1937, Minnesota state law has required MnDOT to adopt a manual with uniform specifications for traffic control devices. This manual has always been required to correlate and confirm with the manual approved by the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. This professional group, in concert with the National Conference on Street and Highway Safety, was responsible for publishing the manual on uniform traffic control devices until the Highway Safety Act of 1966 granted this authority to the newly formed Federal Department of Transportation. And with this new update, some of the things that will be changing is something called the Solomon Rule. I don't know if you've heard about this, but it's this idea that it's safest when all traffic travels at the same speed. And that rule was based on rural highway studies, and so the new guidelines that we will be adopting will not be using that rule as much, because obviously we have traffic moving through rural areas as well as metro areas, so it doesn't really apply to all traffic.
You have an amendment as well.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Chair. And I was thinking I would have Representative Elkins address that.
So it's an A1 amendment, and Representative Elkins to that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the approval of the A1 amendment.
Okay. And can you explain the amendment? It looks to me like a lot of small little grammatical changes, but
exactly. It's just correcting some typos in the original draft. So.
We shared this with Representative Petersburg and Mr. Marble yesterday. Is there discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the A1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. And the bill is amended. Any additional comments you would like to make? You can make a comment, and then we'll have Representative Peterson.
So basically, the federal government has updated the federal manual on uniform traffic control devices. This change includes a dramatic improvement in the speed limit policy for urban and suburban areas. Normally, MnDOT would take up to 2 years to conform the state manual on uniform traffic control devices to the federal one, because it's about a 500-page document. But the improvements in the speed limit policy are so dramatic that they've agreed to adopt the speed limit provisions immediately. So all we're doing here is advancing these provisions so that they can take effect immediately, so that cities can use them to improve their speed limits.
Okay. Thank you for that, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there somebody from the department that can come down and kind of let us know what their process is?
Sure, I assume. Anyone from MnDOT here? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Ken Johnson. I'm the Assistant State Traffic Engineer with the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as was mentioned already, the FHWA, Federal Highway Administration, has published a new manual on uniform traffic control devices, and it is a massive document. It's about that thick. And we have a process where we, per state statute, we have the ability to set our own or create our own manual uniform traffic control devices, the Minnesota manual uniform traffic control devices. But because of the volume of that document, it takes a long time to go through each of the different sections and update the language. And so we do expect it to take about a couple of years for us to get to the point of publishing the new Minnesota Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices. This proposed language would allow us to implement that change immediately, and we would then end up publishing a new revision to the existing Minnesota Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which would take a month. So it would take much less time for us to publish a new revision with this new language. And at this time, MnDOT has no concerns with the language as it stands. We're supportive of the change and the guidance in the federal MUTCD.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you for that. So if I understand what you're saying is that you're okay with giving the authority to set speed limits back to the federal government rather than maintaining here in the state, going through our own process. And I have a couple of issues just with this bill in general, and I know you're laying it over, Mr. Chair, but I'm not sure that it's something that we always want to micromanage everything. And because there was a process in place that you normally would go through, it's difficult for me to say this is the best thing to do. But I understand that by taking on just the federal statutes and the federal adoption, that saves some time because then you don't have to review it. However, there has been a reason why in the past we have decided Minnesota should have its own, because we are different than a lot of other parts of the country as well, and having a universal program that doesn't take into account those differences in regions and so forth is difficult. I also understand that there's an expectation that this may, by reducing speed limits, which I think is the purpose of it, that we're going to be safer on the roads. And unfortunately, that's true if everybody followed the speed limit, but they don't. So the key is, I think we want to be careful on how we implement something that is, as you said, that thick, because what just has a carte blanche. So I have concerns with it, but I understand the importance of it. Thank you.
We'll have a response from either MnDOT or the authors, and then we'll move on to Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the past, we've actually adopted the federal language that they had related to setting speed limits. What they've done with this reiteration is that they've just put a greater emphasis on context, land use context, and the actual determination of what that speed limit actually is. We will still be conducting speed studies. We will still be looking at the context. We'll be looking at a variety of things. This just puts different weights on the elements that we would be taking into consideration. So in the past, we've fully adopted the federal guidance at that time, and we're just continuing to adopt the federal guidance. It shouldn't change our existing process. We just are going to be weighting some of the different factors differently than what the new guidance indicates.
Okay, thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we saw last year what happens when we try and rush things through and we say we're going to get this done in a month's time and we don't care the ramifications. I just want to make sure that once you publish this new portion of the manual, you can go back and revise it again when you publish the entirety of this manual. This doesn't mean that this is the section that we're going to be adopting. We're not touching it. It's now implemented when we do the new actual entire revision, because every time I've ever tried to do something in a rushed fashion, as we did here last year, mistakes were made. Mistakes will be made. I imagine mistakes will be made. And you can revise those?
I believe so. I'd have to review the language again to verify that. But we will be going through the full process to update the federal manual to the Minnesota practices.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Say, will it affect the guidance, the new guidance that we're getting, does it affect the speed on interstate?
No, Mr. Chair, representatives, no, it will not affect that.
So what roads are they, only the state roads, Mr. Chair?
As
the testifier.
Mr. Chair, representative, as it stands right now, Minnesota, based on statutory, and I'm paraphrasing here because it's pretty complicated, but in general, Minnesota DOT has the ability and authorization to set speed limits on the state highway system, on the county highway system, and city roads if they would like us to conduct a speed study. So it would apply to those applications. The new guidance that's listed in the federal MUTCD at this point focuses on context in urban and suburban contexts. So the application on freeways and higher speed roads is going to be equivalent to what it was in the past.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have the ability to adapt any of these that we like to the state, or once we accept the guidelines, we accept them carte blanche, or do we have ability to say, no, that's not what we want to do here?
Mr. Chair, Representative, as we conduct speed studies, because we'll still be conducting speed studies, there are elements of engineering judgment that go into it, and what the language essentially does is it ends up just putting a greater weight on land use context in certain areas, such as urban and suburban contexts. It won't change how we do a lot of other speed limit setting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions of the of MnDOT? Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to observe that this particular provision has been thoroughly vetted by the MnDOT Traffic Safety Office, and you'll find letters in the package from the City Engineers Association and the County Engineers Association, which have also vetted this provision and are in favor of it.
All right. Any further discussion on House File 4168 as amended? Okay. House File 4168. Oh, Representative Reen, did you want to?
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. So I would just like to add that so the federal document that we are talking about, it had been published in 1971, 1978, 1988, 2000, 2003, 2009, 2023. And every time it's been adopted by MnDOT, by our state. So I don't think this is anything unusual. And I will say, just to personalize this a bit, when I was serving on the Chanhassen City Council, we had a number of problems with different roads, in particular Highway 7, or a number of fatalities. And so we talked about what we could do. And Highway 7, it borders Chanhassen and other communities. But we were counseled not to do a traffic study because we were told that it's possible that the speed limit could then be raised. Because oftentimes MnDOT relied heavily on this Solomon curve, this idea that, you know, if traffic is traveling at 70 miles an hour, we don't want to lower it to 60. But that idea that we should be all traveling at the same speed was based on rural highway studies, not on, you know, suburbs and metro area studies. So this, I think, will make it a lot easier for people in cities around the metro to make traffic, you know, speed traffic limits that are more in accordance with safe driving and reduce fatalities. So I'm looking forward to having this, you know, be brought forward, and hopefully it will make our roads a lot safer in the metro area.
One last comment from Representative.
I have a question for Mr. Burris. I think is there any reason why we can't send this bill to the General Register? Should have thought of this earlier.
Yeah. Well, you know, at this point, we're laying it over, and we can send it at any time.
Okay.
I don't think Mr. Burris has it. Your microphone is on.
That's it. I think, Mr. Chair, you have the authority to be able to do what you want. It's your committee, and this isn't something that has to go one way or the other. So I think you're previous.
Okay. We'll lay this bill over, and any further discussion? 4168 as amended is laid over. Okay.
We are going to now proceed to our last bill of the day, and I think we'll be spending quite a bit of time on this one. Representative Sensenmura, would you like to make a motion? I believe we're going to judiciary.
Yeah, and I do have a DE amendment. Would you like me to move that first?
Okay, so Representative Sensenmura moves that House File 2098 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee, and then why don't you explain your amendment?
Yeah.
DE5.
Yes. So there's a number of changes in this amendment, and this is the first time that this bill is being heard before the committee. So I would say major changes, this amendment adds in that it can be used for a red light camera system. It includes some of the work that we have been doing over interim around where these can be placed, and also limits the number of cameras that can be that a municipality can implement according to number of residents. There is new language in here around if a city or municipality is going to implement this, that there must be public engagement around it. There's a lot of changes here. I guess I would just say that this is kind of getting the bill in the shape that I would like based on a lot of work that has been done with multiple stakeholder groups over the interim. So I would like the committee to consider this as the bill.
Discussion of the DE5. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, so proceed with your testimony.
Thank you.
And then we have a number of other public testifiers on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. And I assume that this conversation will be as smooth as the Rotary license plate conversation. So I'm here today to talk about a really important, and also I want to recognize that this bill is very controversial, and I think brings up a number of competing concerns. And so I just want to start out by addressing that and say that a lot of work has been done with various stakeholders, various staff here over their interim, but I believe that, you know, there's still continued work that we want to do on this bill. So just want to start out by saying that. You know, I guess I will say, kind of start with the reason why I was interested in this bill, which is that I live in Minneapolis. I live at the intersection of two very busy streets. And when I had my son about 2.5 years ago, you know, one of the only things that I felt like I could really do with him was just walk around my neighborhood. And it was in that time that, if people have kids, I'm sure you remember, you're kind of half alive because you're not getting any sleep, and so you're kind of walking around in a daze, you know. And when I would walk with him, I realized there was really, because of where I live, there was not more than 3 blocks that I could walk without getting to a really, really busy and what felt like very dangerous street that I was really scared to walk on with a new infant, and also me not feeling at, you know, top capacity. And so that combined with, you know, I live on streets where, if you drive down them, you'll see every few blocks, you'll see memorials to people that have died on those streets. And then I think just the growing concerns that I hear from residents and constituents in my area, and I think is true for across the state, about just concerns about the way that people are driving coming out of COVID, and what kind of new restrictions or new limitations do we need to really kind of rein people's driving in after that time period. So this is a bill to implement traffic safety camera programs in kind of various places. Just a little bit of background on the bill. I know something that comes up when I talk to my residents in Minneapolis is they often remember that in 2004, the city of Minneapolis enacted traffic control signal photo enforcement. So this was around red lights. I was actually a teenager at that time. I remember getting a piece of mail that had a picture of me running a red light. I got a fine. People will also remember that that program was eventually stopped due to a Supreme Court decision, which essentially found at that time that cities really did not have the authority to implement that kind of program. So that was stopped in Minneapolis. And since then, and what the court said was, you know, the state could grant them that authority. So, you know, since that time, Minneapolis, and I think a number of cities in our state have really been engaged in, I think, deep work to try to understand how do we make our streets safer? How do we ensure that we are moving towards zero deaths on our streets? And so Minneapolis has a Vision Zero project that is looking holistically at how do we make our streets safer, how do we make our streets safer for drivers, for walkers, for bikers. And they have for a number of years thought that one tool that they would like in their toolbox to make the streets safer is some kind of traffic camera enforcement program. So I've been working closely with the city of Minneapolis on this bill. I want to be upfront that the city of Minneapolis is really pushing for this. But I do know that a number of other cities or municipalities would be interested and would be able to do so under this bill. So just kind of want to talk about what the bill does. I see this bill as kind of doing three things at a high level. First of all, it is giving state agencies or local authorities to do red light or speed cameras in school or work zones. So we are limiting where these cameras can be placed. It's either a work zone or within 2,000 feet of a school. And it also has to be a location that has been shown to be dangerous and have traffic violations. Secondly, this is establishing a pilot program for speed safety cameras on Trunk Highway and is directing MnDOT to establish that program. And then finally, and I think, you know, really importantly, it's really giving parameters on if cities or municipalities want to implement these programs, what should some of the parameters be? What should some of the limitations be? And these really came from, you know, lots of concerns that folks have raised around how do we balance, you know, what we know could make our streets safer with real concerns around civil liberties, ensuring that people's privacy is protected. And also a big question that comes up, and a number of states and other cities have these programs, and you'll see if you look online, you know, there's lots of concerns around equity that comes up. And just to address that, you know, I think in my research and understanding of this bill, the biggest learning that I have had is that street design really impacts the way that people drive. And so if we are wanting people to drive safer, the best thing that we can invest in, and I say this because I think this is something our committee should work on, is redesigning our streets, right? Like I said, I live on off a busy street, Cedar Avenue in Minneapolis. There's a number of memorials to people who have died on that street. And there's a big sign that says, you know, the county is going to redo that street in 2026, right? But we know that that's going to be a year-long process. And so, you know, that's still 5 years from now where that street will be redesigned. And I think in the meantime, this is a tool that we can use to make our streets safer today while also really investing in street design and understanding that city planning plays a really big role in this. I will just say that there's continued work that we need to do. I was reading through a number of letters about, you know, some of the civil liberty concerns, some of the data privacy concerns. This bill will go to the Judiciary Committee. This bill will go to the Public Safety Committee. You know, I anticipate that there's lots of time to change or clarify language and lots of time for discussions about some of the more civil liberty data privacy elements of that. But with that, I think I will go ahead and turn it over to some testifiers that I have with me today, and I look forward to the discussion with the committee about the bill.
Thank you. So why don't we do this? We'll have the testifiers, but we're going to need to limit them to a couple of minutes because I'm sure there's a lot of questions. And so first on my list is Dr. Nicole Morris. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record. We'll give you two and a half minutes, if that's okay.
I'm Nicole Morris. I'm a research associate professor at the University of Minnesota. So I'd like to begin by giving you a little bit of history about the number of lives that we've lost on Minnesota roadways in the last approximately 10 years, which is 4,000 people. And so this is really important to think about the number of families that have been shattered by these traffic crashes on Minnesota roadways. And as we look at the trends prior to 2020, approximately 24% of our fatal crashes were speed-related. So these are crashes that police officers determined were related to speeding. But ultimately, speeding behavior has significantly worsened since COVID. So we can see this in the traffic crash trends. So in 2019, we had about 77 of our fatal crashes were speed related, but we saw a huge jump in 2020, and this continued to accelerate with more and more of our fatal crashes being speeding related. We saw some settling in 2022, but ultimately we see this as really a new normal for the type of speeding that we have in Minnesota. And we see a similar trend in the types of citations that Minnesota State Patrol has issued. We call this super speeding, so citations issued for over 100 miles an hour. So around 500 in 2019, but in 2020 we had over 1,000 and jumping over to 1,200 and again a little bit of settling. But again, we see this as really a new norm. And quite frankly, this just demonstrates how widespread speeding is in Minnesota, and it is too widespread for in-person enforcement. So ultimately, speed cameras can save lives. This is well-worn research. We have over two decades of consistent research consistently showing that speed cameras can reduce our overall crashes, and fatal and serious injury crashes tend to be even higher numbers than those. And ultimately, this type of enforcement reduces the types of resource demands on law enforcement officers. And the University of Minnesota has done lots and lots of research on various aspects of speed enforcement, and we found that really can be deployed in ways that Minnesotans support. So my own research has found Minnesotans overwhelmingly agree that speeding is a problem for safety on our roadways. My colleague Frank Dalma at the Humphrey School has conducted research to find most Minnesotans support speed enforcement, particularly in school and work zones. We've also found that those that are opposed to speed enforcement will shift their opinion if they're really educated about the safety benefits of speed enforcement. And again, my own research has found that we were able to reduce distraction in work zones. So ultimately, what's at stake here is we are on track for another 4,000 lives lost on Minnesota roadways and a tremendous amount of economic losses. $6.8 billion will be lost in those fatal crashes alone in the next 10 years. So this bill is consistent with our research at the University of Minnesota, and I encourage you to support this bill.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Kelly McCarthy. Hello, welcome to the committee. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, sir. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelly McCarthy, and I'm the Chief of Police for the Mendota Heights Police Department. In 2020, we were looking for ways to increase our traffic safety, as it's the number one concern of our citizens, increase police legitimacy, and help us better deploy our personnel resources in an era where we have not been fully staffed since 2014. I engaged in quite a bit of research, particularly some great information from the World Health Organization around speeding cameras. Gave a presentation to my city council, and we were able to purchase a speed camera system that we use to write warnings only. So we engaged in public comment about where they should be deployed, how they should be deployed. We put out information in areas where they were going to be deployed. And then we were able to use the information that we gathered to better allocate and deploy our actual people. The feedback from the public has been overwhelmingly positive. When I talked to some of my citizens today, they want us to go in this direction and they wanted to be here, but I just didn't think you were ready for that kind of excitement this early in the morning. But I have examples of our Facebook posts. I have examples of what citation notice looks like. We were able to work with some of the preeminent behavioral economists in the world. One right here, Dr. Kathleen Voss from the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Avni Shah from Toronto, in the wording of the citations. And there's in Mendota Heights, we don't have sidewalks, so our pedestrians and our streets share the roadway. So it is important that we can not only, they're looking at you because of the clicking. You're doing great. Okay. I was like, what, is there a bomb? No, okay. Sorry, Rich. So our citizens have been just very, very supportive of it. In addition to the example of the speed notice, I also have examples of our Facebook posts and the comments on it. When we deployed it for the first time, I have a resident who's very concerned about privacy and personal liability, and I just brought him with me when we went out to deploy it. I showed him the data that it would collect. I showed him what the data looked like when we kept it. And then after seeing my technological ability, he was no longer concerned that I was able to spy on him technologically. So I think as people learn about it, they get real familiar and they get real comfortable with it. But for us in Mendota Heights, it has been worth every penny, and I strongly urge you to consider this bill.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you so much. Next we have Ethan Foley, and again, I want to remind testifiers to keep within our time limits because we're going to have a number of questions.
Chair Hornstein, members of the committee, my name is Ethan Foley. I'm the Vision Zero Program Coordinator for the City of Minneapolis. So why is the City of Minneapolis interested in traffic safety cameras? Well, we've heard a little bit about how they're proven and effective at reducing traffic crashes and saving lives. We have a goal of getting to zero traffic deaths, as I know the state does as well. We've two of our major factors in severe and fatal crashes are speeding, number one, red light running, number four. And so this helps us to address those challenges. This is part of our overall strategy on traffic safety. We're not doing this in a vacuum. This is part of our work with street design and other changes to help make our streets safe for everyone. So we've been dealing with challenges that we see across the state. Our fatal crashes, as you can see here, are up significantly since COVID. Here's the stats on just how impactful speeding and red light running are for us in the city on severe fatal crashes. You see the trends here specifically around speeding in the city. This is percentage of fatal crashes that involve clear speeding that we can see evidence of in the crash report. Sometimes there's other ones that we probably don't know for sure, but did include speeding as well. This is now almost two-thirds of our fatal crashes speeding is involved. When we look at the lives lost, 31 people have been killed in the city of Minneapolis in speeding or red light running related crashes in just the last 2 years. 18 of these people were not the driver who was speeding or running a red light. They were innocent people. They might have been driving themselves or trying to cross the street with their kids, as one woman was. She and all her kids were hit by a driver who was speeding and ran a red light. She was killed. Her kids were severely injured. We have to do more to address these challenges. I'm going to just share just a little general info on traffic safety cameras, and maybe I can come back and share some of the detailed provisions at the end in the bill. But just so you know, these are widely used around the country now. You can see these are on all kinds of different states across the country, both for red light running and speeding. Overall, there are 29 states that have for either red light running or speeding. So we have a lot of programs we can look to for best practices and how this works. But also, as we've heard, we've seen the safety results in these states consistently. So you can, I think you'll hear from MnDOT in a second, but you know, MnDOT looked at this, and every methodologically sound study of U.S. speed safety camera systems has found reductions in deaths, injuries, crashes, and speeds. The Federal Highway Administration says this is a proven safety countermeasure that can reduce injury crashes up to 47%. These are very significant safety benefits. Red light cameras are even more widely used than speed cameras across the country. And a big study of all the studies on this found it's associated with a 20% decrease in total injury crashes. Again, very significant safety benefits for our residents and the residents of the state. Okay, I'll come back later, I think, for bill overview details, unless you'd like me to cover those now, Chair.
Really needing to move along, so if there are some member questions that you can answer, we'll have you back. Next, we have Councilmember Michael Rangel. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record.
So good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you.
Thank you so much, Representative Sansomir, for all your hard work on this. My name is Councilmember Michael Rainbow. I represent the 3rd Ward in Minneapolis. So that would be half of downtown, separated by the river, and then the east side of town. I live in northeast Minneapolis. And I'm here today as an elected official because you understand how all government is interrelated. So So as a city, there are things we cannot do without the help of the state, federal, or county governments. I'm here to ask for your help on these cameras. I get calls all the time, emails. People are afraid to walk around. The atrocious behavior that has happened in the last couple of years with these red light and speed violations, it's just terrible. So I'll leave it to the experts to put the proper controls on this as far as civil liberties and our staff. Ethan, thank you so much for your testimony. But we need the help. And please help our city become safer for residents. So again, as an elected official, as someone who shares an election certificate with you, thank you for your time, and please help the city that I represent.
Thank you so much, council member. Next we have Reed Lytle. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members. My name is Reed Leedley. I am the Vice President of Safety Signs. And so when you see the orange stuff out on the construction sites, a lot of times that's our equipment or a company like ours. I'm also on the National Temporary Traffic Control Committee, the Regional American Traffic Safety Services Board of Directors, and I have the honor of being on the the formation of the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety, and I'm representing the contractors involved in construction. So you've heard from the University of Minnesota, and you've heard from some of the engineering experts and so on and so forth, and I just want to give a quick perspective from those that are working out on the roadway. We have data where we have 70 to 90% of people are exceeding the speed limit by 10 miles an hour going through our work zones on a consistent basis. And we've had have documented where vehicles have traveled in excess of 90, 100, even 110 miles an hour through our work zones. This is next to our workers. And so, as it was stated, Federal Highway endorses this as a proven method. We've been working on this for years with different stakeholders and really feel like the planets have aligned to have a well-vetted program that is going to influence behavior. The public support is there, and so that's your constituents, that's our fellow Minnesotans, that's the people traveling through our work zones, and those men and women that are standing out on the road next to this traffic. So I just want to thank you for listening and understanding that this is a problem, bringing this forward, because I think it'll be a solution and we know it will save lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lively. Next we have Josh Hodek. I like that you're hustling down.
I respect your time. Chair Hornstein, members, my name is Joshua Hodek. I'm here today as what transportation engineers that you've heard from already referred to as a vulnerable road user. I drive, I walk, I bike, I take the bus, I ride the train. Today I drove. But last fall I was bicycling with my daughter, who was 11 years old at the time. It was broad daylight. We came to an intersection with a traffic signal. We were in the South Metro, but it doesn't really matter because we could have been anywhere, maybe even your city, because what happened next could and does happen everywhere. The traffic light turned green. We looked both directions. There are no vehicles, so we had the right of way, of course, so we started pedaling across the intersection. And then from another short block away, a person driving a small SUV at a very high speed sped down the street, blew the red light, and if we were riding any faster, I would not be at this desk talking to you today. I would be dead, and so would my daughter. We have a safety crisis on our roads, and no offense to the law enforcement officers in the room today, but there's virtually no traffic enforcement. There's no consequences for the irresponsible, reckless driving. There's no rules. It's a wild west out there. And as you heard, the body counts on our streets in Minnesota and injuries from traffic crashes in our hospital emergency rooms are mounting. In order to permanently and equitably improve safety, fixing unsafe street design should be the highest priority. But that's not going to happen overnight. We need a comprehensive approach to what I call traffic violence. This bill legalizing equitable automated traffic enforcement is a critical tool. Please support it. It's not partisan. It's common sense. And sadly, it's really needed. Our lives, maybe your life, maybe a family member's life, my daughter's life, may depend on you supporting this traffic camera and safety enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your powerful testimony. Next, we have Rich Neumeister.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rich Neumeister. I've been an advocate on privacy and open government since the late 70s in the halls of the Capitol. I've helped many of your past members of House and Senate, current members, and hopefully if I still live a while, your future members on some of the issues that come before you in those two broad areas. The bill before you today, the concept and the discussion of the topic has been part of the legislative process for 25 years. I remember from the Northeast, Representative Burnett bringing the bill. And so when the bill came out last year, I have come to a point to where, yes, something needs to be done, but let's do it comprehensively. Let's look at all the issues, give it to the legislature, and then have a comprehensive bill. As you know, last year, you authorized a study to be done. Now we're dealing with this bill that does not take a comprehensive approach, does not deal with fairness, equitability, transparency, and accountability when you're going to have an automatic traffic surveillance enforcement regime. And this is what it does. So there needs to be a lot of work done. So you as policymakers have to decide, are we going to do a comprehensive study with all people in a room through the leadership of the Department of Public Safety, come with you with a comprehensive looking at other states and other entities? Or are we going to do this piecemeal or do that? Now, who knows what will happen in the mire of the legislative process? But one option can be, if you're going to go forward, is cut off, or bifurcate this bill for the traffic safety zone separately, because it's very clear the commissioner does two spots for it. In regards to the other part, where you're going to unleash at least a minimum 1,000 of these devices throughout Minnesota based on the formula, Hennepin County itself would have 120 cameras to be placed. Minneapolis itself would have 42. That's 162 just in that area. They do bring issues forward, the type of technology used. The privacy element needs to be thrashed out more because it's more geared.
Mr. Neumeister, we'll give you another minute here.
Due process and constitutional issues, the cash cow revenue raise. Montgomery County, which is very similar, which has 78 cameras in the county, raised nearly $15 million at $40 a crack. The part of the law that does say is nil about how the money, where it goes, how much the contractor gets, all those kinds of things. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are some things that need to be thought well by the pushers of this bill, and for a comprehensive, I would recommend either do the study, don't go forward with the bill, and come back next year, or split the bill, focus on what Minneapolis does, and let's do a little bit of a study there. and the issues be addressed.
Thank you, Chairman, very much.
Members of the committee, as always, if any individual legislator wishes to contact me, you know how to get a hold of me. I can give you tons of info what other states do.
Thank you so much.
Next, we have Abby Brydeck.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Abby Brydeck, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. Our group is a trade association representing asphalt pavement contractors who do work from driveways to freeways. Work zone safety is the number one priority for our association and our members. Roadways are our workspace, and keeping our workers as well as those who drive through those work zones is safe is tantamount to anything else we do. Reed Leedley really explained our position very well, so I won't repeat what he went through. But a few years ago, some of you may have joined a kind of a field trip with myself and AGC to go onto a work zone on a freeway and see what it felt like to have those cars whipping past you, and especially these days when we have the so-called super speeders. It's absolutely terrifying. We kind of refer to this proposal, automatic speed enforcement in the contracting space, as the holy grail of work zone safety. And if you can find something else that could reduce fatalities and injuries by almost 50%, I'd like to know. It's a really meaningful proposal. You know, when proposals like this are passed over, it really sends a message to our workforce that their lives and their safety is not a priority. I just really want to thank you, Representative Zermira, for bringing this up, and I hope that we can push this forward today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Braddock. Next, we have C.J. Linder. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. My name is C.J. Linder. I'm the Education Manager at the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. We're a statewide nonprofit that does education advocacy encouragement to make Minnesota a better place for people that want to walk, bike, and roll to their wherever they're going. And that's something we know that Minnesotans do want to do. Livability in terms of being able to walk and bike places is actually the number one most important thing to people in choosing where they live. And unfortunately, more people aren't able to walk and bike as much or as many places as they would like to. Because of real and perceived risks. The largest risk to being able to safely walk and bike is traffic. So that's why I'm here testifying on behalf of this bill. As you've heard already, the speed cameras are a proven safety countermeasure that we know does improve the safety of our roads for all people. It's not only for those walking and biking on our roads, it also improves it for drivers on the roads. So this is, as you've heard, a common sense demonstrated countermeasure. We support kind of an all of the above approach to traffic safety, and so this is only one piece of it. We would love for our roads to be designed in a way that naturally encourage safe driving behaviors. Speed cameras are one of the easiest to implement, the lowest cost solutions that we have available to us. So putting this into the toolbox of our road engineers, our cities, our counties, our state, is a really important thing for us to do. So thank you for considering this bill. I hope to have your support for it.
Thank you very much. And that concludes our public. Is there anyone else from the public, by the way, that wants to testify? I would ask you to be very, very brief.
Representative, Chair, Representatives, I'm going to pull up my PowerPoint for this.
Okay, you have 2 minutes. Proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ken Johnson. You've seen me again, Assistant State Traffic Engineer with MnDOT's Office of Traffic Engineering. MnDOT has been involved in the development of a few reports related to speed safety cameras, and this presentation is going to provide a brief summary of each. The first relevant report is a work zone speed management study, a legislative report that MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety led due to a statutory requirement passed in 2021. A second report is a speed safety camera transportation research synthesis that has already been referred to at least once. And there's a third study That's another transportation research synthesis that looked into administrative rules and structures that MnDOT is working on right now. First, I'll cover the work zone speed management study. I presented to the legislature in 2022 about this, and this is going to be a refresher. The development of the study is a result of a law passed in 2021 that required MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety to perform the study. It was to include the elements that are listed on the screen there, but the relevant ones for today are number 1 and 4, evaluating the existing legal authority for methods to reduce vehicle speeds and to improve safety in work zones, and make recommendations on state law changes to improve work zone safety. The primary reason the study was initiated was to improve work zone safety. Representatives know this, work zones are challenging. Traffic patterns are modified, workers are often working close to traffic, focused on their work, not focused on traffic, and this can cause safety issues for both the workers and the traveling public. Add to this a speaking issue, which has been brought up a couple of times. It's been problematic for a while, but it's getting worse. We need to come up with new approaches, and this study investigated that. This puts numbers to some of the testimony that's been provided before. This is just one example of speeding within a work zone. There was a 60-mile-an-hour, 24/7 construction speed limit set on a Maple Grove project on I-94, and as you can see on the screen there, only 36% of the drivers followed the speed limit at 60 miles per hour, 64% exceeded the speed limit, and 4% were excessively speeding. 4% may not sound like much, but this counted for over 13,500 vehicles within that week were driving over 75 miles per hour as work was going on within that work zone. It's a well-known and studied engineering fact that drivers primarily determine what speed they will drive based on the road environment. Speed limits on signs that don't match the speed which drivers would expect to drive are ignored by most drivers. We've got multiple studies on that. One of our challenges in work zones is that speed limits are particularly difficult to enforce. There's usually not room to pull drivers over. There's driver behavior to take into account. Troopers have told us that drivers are often confused on what to do when getting pulled over in a work zone. Some have even stopped in the through traffic lanes. Remembering those numbers I provided a little bit earlier, to give a little bit of context, remember there were that... I'll finish up this one little bit. In 2018, there were 406 speed limit citations issued across the state. In 2019, there were 340 site work zone speed limit citations across the state. There were 2020, only 330 citations were issued across the state. Compare that to the over 13,500 drivers that exceed speed limit by over 15 miles per hour in 1 week in that Maple Grove work zone.
Okay, members, we have some time for member questions. Representative Petersburg, and then Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will, first of all, ask for a roll call on this bill.
Okay.
When it goes through.
Roll call has been asked and granted.
So I've always been one that has been very concerned about safety and when you're behind the wheel. I tell all the young people that I know of, and we need to remind ourselves that every time we get behind the wheel, we're getting behind a dangerous weapon, a deadly weapon, and it's important for that. And so I'm always very concerned about that. And seeing that this is a DE5, which I'm not sure I've ever seen a DE5 before, indicates to me that there's been a lot of work on this bill. We've heard all the testifiers have been talking about the negative side of speeding, which is absolutely true. But I think it's a time for us to also talk about the meat in this particular bill. And so I'm going to reiterate what I think I read in the bill, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like this bill has no real teeth for enforcement. Instead, it sets all of these either speeding or stop signs. It changes them to a non-moving violation, so it doesn't show up on reports. There's no enforcement or a program in order to actually collect those data or to collect the fines for it, which means people will kind of just slug them off. And we heard testimony earlier from the university that said even with the Department of Transportation, or excuse me, the public state patrol issuing more and more citations for speeding in excess of 100, they continue to grow. So the question is will additional enforcement actually change behavior? Because I think what we're all looking for is trying to change driver's behavior when they get behind the wheel. The other concern that I have is I've been told that this can't go on your record, and yet I know that the laws around CDLs are very important, and that they are directed by federal law. And so I'm concerned that how we can convince the federal regulations that moving violations, which this actually is, just because we say it's not, that it won't be impacted by CDLs and others. And so I have a lot of those concerns that I don't think are addressed here. But my concern is, if there's no teeth for enforcement, if there's the cameras are only going to deal with the car, so you're penalizing the owner of the car, not the driver, how is that actually going to help improve behavior when we don't really address the needs that are there? So those are some of what I understand from the bill and the concerns I have.
Thank you for expressing those, Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you, Lead Petersburg. Thank you, Chair Harnstein. I think I heard kind of two questions there, one around the enforcement. I would love to have Mr. Foley talk about what we have seen in other cities in terms of enforcement and the kind of teeth in this, and then I think he can also answer the other question about CDLs and how this would affect people's records.
Chair Hornstein and Representative Petersburg. So one of the things with automated enforcement is you have that certainty. You're going to get the citation if you are violating the speed limit or running a red light. And so what that means is there's a sign. This bill requires signage ahead saying, hey, there's automated enforcement ahead. And what we see in other cities is that it does change the behavior because people don't want to get that $40 ticket every time they go through that intersection or that stretch of roadway. And so, for example, New York City in their pilot program, 81% of drivers never got a second camera ticket because they changed their behavior. So this is a really effective way to address the challenges we have with limited enforcement and doing it really effectively. To this question on CEL holders, we heard from DPS, and hopefully they can nod and confirm, that they received a message from counsel at the Federal Motor Carriers Safety Administration confirming what other states are doing, which is that the federal masking requirements around CDL holders do not apply for traffic safety cameras if it's not going on anyone's record and you're not identifying the driver. And so that's why in this bill there isn't a special call out for CDL holders, because we don't need it for to meet the federal laws. And that means everybody is being treated fairly and equally within this proposal. And we don't need it to go on driver's records to change behavior, because most of the other states aren't identifying the driver either. It's not going on driver's records, and they're still seeing the positive benefits from the programs.
Thank you, Mr. Foley.
Just one
follow-up, and then we'll have
The only thing that I would debate with you about is the certainty that the driver is getting the ticket. They're not. The owner of the car is. And that's to me, there's going to be a lot of big deal about that into the past. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was at a school board meeting recently at the Columbia Heights School Board. And on 49th Avenue in Columbia Heights, there's probably about, I think, at least three schools. There's the high school, middle school, and an elementary school right on that road. And it also intersects University Avenue, too. So it's very, very busy. And when I was at the school board meeting, they were just really concerned about the safety of the kids in that area. And so when I heard we were hearing this bill, I texted my school board members, and they're very grateful. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. I know we're not a civil liberty committee, but that is the number one concern I have, is, yes, there's protections. Clearly, you've made efforts to hem that in, but it's like I miss the days of the old Democrats who wouldn't even consider this issue. Automatic enforcement is obviously a big concern, because you should have the right to defend yourself, and there should be an engagement with another human, because there's many different reasons somebody would also run a red light. So one of the questions I have is, so somebody's taking their wife to the hospital, and they see they can safely blow through this red light. Are they just going to be automatically enforced? How can they defend themselves? Also, there's that driver issue. Is it impossible for a driver to say they weren't driving and it's always going to hit the vehicle? And then I believe I saw in the bill that there's an $80 cap that they can achieve. So the testifier did mention, oh, well, they don't want to pay $40 every time. But what if they just, well, they run it 50 times in a year or something like that? Is it just $80 and that's all gone away? Also, with the data being retained, it says, I believe, 30 days. And what if somebody doesn't pay that violation? Is it going to be hung on to longer than that? So those are the litany of concerns. I understand that's a lot, so hopefully you can address them. And then I'll have one more follow-up.
Sure. Which of you would like to answer Representative West's question?
I think I'll turn it over to
Mr. Folley.
Chair Hornstein, Representative West. Okay, three questions there. So there are provisions here that you can contest a violation. And I'll also note that any violation that is triggered by the system has to be reviewed within this bill by a trained local enforcement agent who is the only one who is able to actually issue the citation. So there has to be a human reviewing the information and issuing that citation. It has to be a trained local enforcement agent. If in that, they can use, they'll have discretion that they can use on, based on the evidence, but they also, someone can contest. And so they can come forward and say, here's why I ran this red light. I was on the way to the hospital. And then a judge can consider that and whether it would they shouldn't be liable for in that situation. So you have the ability to contest. That's really important and really foundational in this bill. I want to note on the $80 question, $80 ticket question, the bill, it's an $80 ticket if you're going 20-plus miles an hour over the speed limit. And so that it doubles from the $40, just like speed tickets double at 20 miles an hour over the speed limit in statute today and general speed limit tickets. The data retention, the 30-day limit, is only if it's resolved. It's once you pay your fine or it's all resolved, the data is, there's requirements for data destruction in here. If it's not resolved, you're challenging, contesting a ticket, then that data would be retained until that is finalized. So it's part of the
Any quick follow-up for you?
Is there an $80 cap that when you, can you wipe out all your previous violations? And I'll just quickly say what I was going to say and then we can move on. Things that I think would improve this, I really appreciate the location stuff. It's well limited to work zones and around schools. And they have to be a safety concern, not just throwing up cameras. So I appreciate your work on that. I think with the addition to the public engagement, there should be a referendum requirement. So if a city wants to implement this, I hear Minneapolis and many elected officials from Minneapolis are saying, hey, this is what our people want. Well, a referendum, I think, would be the right way to go, because then you can get a true consent of the people to be monitored in this way. But I would like to know my previous question on $80, can you wipe all your violations away?
Chair Hornstein, Representative West, no, there isn't a provision in the bill that sets a max of, $80 for paying out violations.
Thank you very much. Do you have any closing comments before we do a roll call vote?
Yeah. So thanks for the conversation today. I look forward to continuing the conversation both in for the committees and also I'm happy to meet with anyone about this bill. I think what I will say, and I think this is a broader theme of some of the work that I know I'm committed to doing on this committee, is that I do sometimes feel like we are in an abusive relationship with our cars. We accept a lot of terrible things that happen from cars that we would not accept from other things. If we think about from emissions all the way to what one of my testifiers talked about, traffic violence. 31 people died in Minneapolis last year due to cars. If 31 people died on our light rail, we would be up in arms. It would be all our committee is talking about. And I will say that I was a reluctant author of this bill. I see so many concerns, and last year we did not have a hearing on it. And this summer I was really like, I don't know if I want to move forward. And then this summer, 5 young women were killed in my community as someone was speeding off a highway. And I attended that funeral, and I thought about the intersection. It's an intersection that I drive through often. And I thought about the real lives that could be saved. I think this is one tool that we need to consider. And I really hope that our committee has further conversations about traffic safety, because when I think about a robust robust public safety system, I think being safe on our streets, being safe from cars, is a really big part of that. So I appreciate the discussion today, and I renew my motion to send this on to the Judiciary Committee. Thank you.
Okay, we have a roll call that's been requested, and the clerk will take
as amended.
The roll. As amended, yes. So Tenzin will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Tapke. Excused. Lee Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Brand. Brand excused. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Fogelman.
No.
Fogelman, no. Representative Fidella. Excused. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Representative Kraft, aye. Representative Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Representative Nelson. Representative Norris.
Aye.
Representative Norris, aye. Representative Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Representative Sensenmura.
Aye.
Sensenmura, aye. Representative West.
No.
Representative West, no. Representative Nelson.
Pass.
Chair Hornstein, the ayes are 6, nays are 4, 3 excused, 1 pass.
Okay, the motion prevails. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
I think 6-5.
Oh,
6-5.
Okay, 6-5 is the correct vote, and the motion prevails. So, members, are thank you very much for a great discussion on several bills today. And our next meeting is going to be Tuesday the 5th. And with that, we are adjourned.